Welcome to Design Oracles. We are here to pontificate, evangelize, and educate you on residential interior design and architecture.
I'm Amity Worrell, interior designer of Amity Worrell & Company.
And I'm Diane Kett, architect of DK Studio, and together partners at Amity Kett.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to our podcast today. The subject is...
We are going to do a history lesson today to talk about modern and contemporary architecture, design style.
Yeah. And interiors. Don't forget interiors.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Just because there's a lot of people that say they want modern, but it's actually contemporary and...
Yeah, there's a lot of confusion early on when we start talking to clients. If the language is not aligned, that they have an understanding of what they're asking for and what it means to us, so we can kind of just make sure we're aligned. So, for instance, there is contemporary design, which is defined as what is contemporary means just simply what's happening today. What are people building today? And what is valid sometimes, and what's being built sometimes regional. It just depends, you know, what they're building in Charleston or what they're building contemporarily in Texas or wherever you are is different. Whereas modern design is actually a period of design that is defined by sort of 1945 to 1969.
So, and often called mid-century modern.
MCM, as they call it today. Yeah. And so it's really important. The reason it's important is for us to have clear definitions of what these things mean is so that we can talk about them and so that we can have an understanding. So when clients come to us and say they want a modern home, I need to know and Diane needs to know, what does that mean to them?
Right. Yes, which we often ask. So when they say modern, what exactly are you talking about? And we want to see images.
Yeah. And there are features that Diane can tell us a little bit about some of the features of modern homes.
So the modern design style used new technologies of the era. Amity had said, you know, 1945 to 69, which was, you know, use of glass, steel, and concrete. It was all more new. And it was really embracing minimalism, function, and then a connection to the outdoors. I think that's one of the biggest things is the modern architecture movement really connected the inside to the outside. And they took a lot of inspiration from the Scandinavian and Bauhaus design, which kind of happened in the 20s and 30s. But basically, after World War II, American families started to move to the suburbs, and the mid-century modern home movement, because it was such a big boom, was able to just really take hold of that. And they were larger lots, so they could really spread out. It wasn't like you were working with the tiny lots that you have in inner cities and row houses, apartments, that kind of thing. So we could have really bright natural light, open concept living spaces, you know, big sliding glass doors, and post and beam structure, sometimes exposure of steel, or they would expose the wood elements too. We often see that a lot of times the beams are kind of, you know, needing some love by the time we get to some of them that we get to help restore.
So, yeah, I think one of the most important things to me personally that is a difference kind of between the contemporary and the modern is that connection to nature. If you think about a Frank Lloyd Wright house, which, of course, Frank Lloyd Wright was not exactly defined by mid-century modern, but a lot of mid-century modern is taking their cues from the prairie style that he worked in and that vernacular. And that kind of spread out space that connects very deliberately to the outside and is quiet, and the forms almost recede at times in a beautiful way into the natural surroundings around them. Whereas contemporary design, at least in the region we're in and in many regions right now, is taking a different turn.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, talking about Frank Lloyd Wright, a lot of it was very linear and very low roof slopes. And now I feel like the contemporary, while it takes some cues from modern, it definitely is like just put on the land, sitting there, and it's bold and it's unique and you see it.
It's defining itself decidedly kind of against the landscape at times. It's staking its claim as I am here and I am fabulous and I am tall and I am large, or at least the colors will sometimes be very deliberately poppy, you know, kind of separate from the natural surroundings versus, you know, we were talking earlier about the color differences between the two. And, you know, black, white, and gray tends to be a very popular contemporary color pattern or grouping that people are using, which is not at all what you would have seen in a mid-century modern home. You would have seen earth tones,
right?
Warm browns and rust.
A fabulous gold. Avocado green.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And turquoise was another color that was it. So some – the point really being that some elements of modern defined by those brackets as a period in design have translated into contemporary. But I find – I don't know if Diane agrees with this, but a lot of times when people come to us with a request for a modern home, what they really mean, I think, is what we're defining as contemporary here.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, like the Frank Lloyd Wright, again, nod to him, is the use of the steel and the concrete and the glass. That was all very, you know, new ways and technologies of building. And so now with the contemporary, we've learned even more about how much more you can do with all of that. And so a lot of times we will have giant glass walls or giant solid concrete walls, use of steel. We even have now use of metal siding, which you didn't have back then. Definitely the contemporary is taking a nod to some of those technologies that were being developed and has gotten them a lot further developed.
Yeah, I think the engineering abilities that we have are different. So, you know, going into as someone who works a lot in renovations and additions, so looking at the actual period of modern architecture, going into those homes, the ceilings are often low, deliberately low. Some of that is about getting the HVAC system into the ceiling, so they needed the space. But some of that is about creating a space that is quiet. They did a lot more drop ceilings in actual mid-century modern homes for that level of intimacy and quiet. Some of it is, you know, like we're saying, because of the way that they're built, but some of it was very deliberate. And then things like smaller windows, you know, you do think of a modern mid-century modern home as having nice connection to the outside, but they didn't have the engineering capabilities we have now. So as Diane's saying, we can make giant, larger windows. So we can sort of take that form, that modern form, and blow it up and change the scale of it to a point that it becomes what we're doing today, which is the contemporary design. And then regionally, you know, Diane is working in different regions. I'm working in different regions. Wouldn't you say, Diane, there's just a different house in Charleston today or in New mm-hmm. Orleans today that is a contemporary design would still be different than what you might see in Texas.
Right. Or like going to the Northwest in Seattle. And then, of course, if you go to another country such as Australia, New Zealand, they're really doing some amazing contemporary architecture as well. Or, you know, Beijing, China, they're all really blowing it up over there.
So, yeah, I think it's contemporary. That it's just the definition of the terms. It's not judgment on what is good, what is bad. It's just for us as practitioners to understand what it is the client wants. So it occurs to me that reminds me of kind of what was going on in different periods in different periods, people look back to history for inspiration. You know, the postmodern era, there was a lot of, you know, we've all seen those 1980s houses that kind of look like a Federalist bank.
POMO.
Postmodern. There's a lot of Victorian houses that were looking back to a Gothic architecture and pulling that forward. So now one other kind of contemporary thing that's happening is a nod to craftsman style. People are really looking at craftsmen and re-envisioning it. And I think some of that, I'm referring to some of these pocket neighborhoods I see popping up mm-hmm. where the homes are placed on the lot in such a way that it feels very contemporary, but they are trying to harken back to a craftsman style.
Ah, okay.
Where you've seen these neighborhoods, there's no sidewalk. They build the houses up to the street. Because they're trying to fit more people in. And then they've taken that craftsman style and they've raised it up and made it kind of taller. So anyway, I'm just seeing my point here is that really it's inside out as an interior designer looking at what the interior is going to be and how to finish that out. But it's also how we use the lots. Like when you're placing a house on a site, Diane, wouldn't you say that older houses used less of the site sometimes than depending on the region than contemporary homes?
Yeah, right. I mean, and also I think back then people were expecting smaller size houses, but definitely the modern, again, with the indoor-outdoor connection, and sometimes now with the contemporary, I feel that if they were, when they're put on the same lot, doesn't necessarily focus on that indoor-outdoor connection and thinking about when you're in the space, what is it going to, what are you going to see tree lines? Are you going to see, you know, the nature that's placed in the backyard or a garden? A lot of times in the modern, they had built-in planters incorporated within the architecture of the house, and you really don't see that anymore. The scale is also a huge thing in the proportion. A lot of times you'll have a two-story room, which is, you know, 16, 20 feet tall and feels pretty horrible to be in. You don't really like to sit in there. You'll pass through it and think, oh, this is a cool space. But to be the main living area never feels really great. And it's usually has a ton of glass, so it's got blinding light. And then you can't even really watch the TV because there's so much reflection. And so, you know, things to think about are the scale. And so sometimes the contemporary, because they're wanting to make this big brash statement, will do things like that.
Yeah, I think they're doing it for the sake of doing it because they can. It sometimes feels a little show-offy because we have the ability to build this way. We can have vaulted ceilings that go on forever. We can, you know, heat and cool it and do it in such a way that you don't notice the ducts but just because you can doesn't mean you should. And so to Diane's point, I think a lot of the way to make a home feel comfortable feel comfortable and look beautiful is thinking about those the ceiling heights, how the rooms are proportioned. We're all spending a lot more time in our homes now, and I know a lot of people are coming to me saying, "I'm not comfortable there. It doesn't work." You know, maybe it's the open plan is too open. I don't have a place to escape, or I don't have easy connection to my backyard, or the light, like Diane just mentioned, is glaring on my computer screen and I'm trying to work. And so I think it just is important to have a thoughtful conversation about how you're actually going to live in the space, rather than just looking at it kind of as from the outside in. How will this look from the outside? Or you know, just because we can make the ceilings tall, is that really what's going to make us feel comfortable in the space?
Mm-hmm. So the scale is just really important in getting that right. You know, sometimes when you're designing the house, you think, oh, well, let's make this a really tall piece over here and this a smaller piece. But then, you know, it might be a bedroom. And then you think, oh, that's not going to work because no one really wants to sleep in a room with 20 foot tall ceilings. I mean, maybe you did if you were living in a castle, but not in, you know, today's world typically.
Yeah, so. I think that's an interesting thing that I have, you know, seen Diane work through with projects where, you know, there's the way that it's going to look from the outside and then feel from the inside and feel from the outside as well. And then making it's a puzzle piece, right? Figuring out, OK, this is the vernacular we're working in. This is the style that we want the house to be. So with that in mind, what that roof line is going to imply about what the interior space does. It's always so interesting to me to see it go from sort of that outside to inside connection, because oftentimes, you know, I'm coming to a project, whether it's with Diane or someone else, that we're just sort of handed this plan to work from, and we're making interior decisions, but we weren't part of that kind of calculus that went into that figuring out what the inside and outside and how they connect. So I think that's a really interesting point is sometimes it's about, you know, the knowledge that the architect has communicating that to the client so that the client gets the look of the house that they want, but then having a clear understanding of what the implications are about how the interior gets laid out. So Another thing to think about with contemporary and modern, and Diane touched on this a little bit earlier, is material use and materials. There's a lot of repeating mid-century materials right now happening in homes, and like a terrazzo look tile floor or terrazzo itself.
Yeah, right. Or, you know, there's also the polished concrete floors look very much like terrazzo.
That's right. They're less expensive typically than doing actual terrazzo. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. And then cork is a material that was used in mid-century homes and even prior to that. And that is having a resurgence right now. I personally think a lot of that has to do with the way that cork feels to kind of live with. It's sort of softer than wood and a great kind of comfortable feel. Paneling on walls, which I know, you know, some people's toes curl at the thought of even paneling a wall because they're thinking of their 1970s paneled den with the Lazy Boy. But that's having a resurgence because that look was kind of mimicking an older style of true mid-century homes. And I don't really know. I have not researched what that's about, like why all of a sudden people stopped paneling their homes. I know costs went up. I don't know if Diane has any knowledge of what
that's. I think it was costs and also just, you know, usually when we are following one style or trend and then all of a sudden it's done, you know, oh, no, we just don't want that anymore. Like all of a sudden, same thing with finishes. No one wants the brass anymore or no one wants the polished nickel. You know, it just constantly is changing as far as metal finishes. So I think it's similar with the paneling. And I think lately the paneling has come back because it feels good and just adds this extra je ne sais quoi to your space, right?
I completely agree. Preach into the choir. Yeah, I think it's interesting. We're working with a client now who did a little toe curling when we said, let's panel the walls. And so this gentleman grew up in a house that had vertical paneled, you know, pine look, very character forward walls. And so, you know, the conversation is, well, okay, let's turn the panel boards on their side and do them horizontally and widen them and maybe do a walnut, something with a tight grain. So it's that balance of kind of taking the good parts of what is, you know, from a modern world, modern 1945 to 1969 defined, and bringing that into a contemporary home in such a way that is celebrating the past and taking what worked there, the comfort level maybe of those homes, which I do find them, the scale of them to be comfortable for people to live in, and repeating it in a contemporary home in a way that gives you that comfort, but also makes you feel current. You know, everybody wants to be living the way people live today because that, you know, our family lives are all very active. We have, well, at least in different times, we have people in our homes a lot. We need the space for people to gather. I would say, too, the movement towards more casual living is still a trend. Would you agree with that, Diane?
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. We haven't seen formal dining rooms come back.
Yep, that hasn't come back. That separation is just not, for most people, something that they really want. So we're still seeing a lot of open plan spaces. I personally love walls, so I celebrate when people want to add walls back into their home because it gives me an opportunity to decorate that wall and add a sofa or piece of furniture and give them function or paneling. But I don't ever think that that complete separation of formal space to private space will be a thing for most people.
Yeah, probably not. Although sometimes, you know, I have found some people want like a separate living room that's separate from the big family room. And it still might have a TV in it, but they just kind of want another, like you said, walls, like another little space to be in. And so I think that is kind of a new thing coming about.
That's music to my soul. I love adding walls. And I also, you know, we all like to joke about, you know, Aunt Tilly's living room that she had the plastic on the sofa and no one was allowed to go in. However, Aunt Tilly's house always looked good. And so good to her and, you know, looked complete. So creating a space, you know, even if it's just a small entrance hall or a little sitting room off the side of the entrance hall or some place for the eye to rest in a spot that can feel clean and tidy and organized and done is kind of nice. You know, we don't all, you know, we do, many of us, me included, live with some clutter and some disorganization just with kids and dogs and cats and life. So having that separate little bit of space for our eye to rest that feels presentational and can be put forward, I don't think is a bad thing. I don't think we have to get rid of all of that formality.
Yeah. And another thing is like having the two chairs sitting in front of windows, and maybe it's somehow off of the kitchen area. You know, my parents actually did that. They had a porch off of the breakfast and they enclosed it and just put two chairs there and basically just sat and watched nature outside. And it was always a great respite. And I love to sit there, and it's great to sit there and read, or, and it's just like this little quiet, smaller space off of a larger space.
Yeah. Creating little moments of intimacy. I'm fond of saying that, you know, we like to use oval dining tables a lot for clients. A lot of people want to fit a lot of people around the table, so that an oval shape will give you a lot of opportunity for cramming a lot of people around a table comfortably, especially if it's got a pedestal base. But the good thing about an oval, to Diane's point about those creating those little intimate spaces, is it creates a spot at the end where two people can sit. If you don't have 6 people or 8 people or 12 people over for dinner, it's just 2 people having breakfast, having those little moments of opportunity for a smaller scale feeling space and that intimacy, I think, is really important.
Mm-hmm. You know, what else is another interesting thinking about the intimacy and stuff that you were just talking about is fireplaces. So the fireplace and hearth was always huge in the modern houses. They always had one, right? And they usually had that typical mid-century stone or like the rustic colors with it, pieces of wood for the mantle. And now with the contemporary, there is always still the fireplace, but it's very bare bones. No decoration, usually no mantle, no hearth. Sometimes it might even be electric. So definitely, you know, it's usually more of a bigger statement in the home, but it's still very simple and not adorned and embellished. And
yeah, it's been stripped down a bit. Maybe it's plaster and it's just a linear firebox, and maybe it's got some pretty colors sort of in it. It's more techno sometimes.
Right.
that's a trend.
Yeah, where the colors can be pink, yellow, blue, whatever color you want for the flame.
Yeah. We don't need to warm ourselves by it anymore. No. It's not the hearth of the home. I think the television or the island or maybe the breakfast table tends to be the place that people spend a lot of time. So one trend that I'm promoting with a lot of clients is taking their, and I think this is historic. I mean, I've worked in some 1940s homes that had this, where there are walls, so the kitchen is disconnected from the more formal front of the house, but it has a family space within it. It's got maybe a banquette by a window, same, you know, so you can sit and look out. Be with whoever's cooking, and spend time together as a family in that kitchen space, which I think is great.
We are currently actually working on a remodel where we have, it's this weird back room. And so we're reorganizing it with a kitchen, and it's not a huge space, but it has the client wanted a space where she could just put a sofa so that her kids could maybe just be sitting there lounging or whoever, while, you know, she and her husband are cooking.
Yeah, I think it's great for families to extend their kitchen areas. Doesn't have to be formal, but in such a way that gives them an opportunity for some upholstered seating, a pair of chairs. And I love Diane's idea of, you know, kind of keeping, I picture the couple sitting there with maybe their binoculars looking out at the birds. I mean, we're all stuck in our houses a lot these days. So, but yeah, creating views. So getting back to kind of that contemporary versus modern, I think the relevance of it to me is in talking about it and is in understanding when someone comes to us. I'll give one example too, is why I think it's so important, is clients will come to us and their knee-jerk reaction is, I like modern design. I want this space to be modern. And then they start talking about their love of mid-century modern. And Maybe they watched Mad Men a lot, and then they, you know, whatever it is, wherever they've gotten these ideas, it's been out there for about 20 years now going on. So, and then they'll say, okay, I'll send you my images. I'll send you some inspiration images of spaces that I love. And then the inspiration images arrive and you go, wait, what? None of these are relating to necessarily what they've said. This is not what they're looking at and seeing. This is just the way they're terming it with their words, but it's not what their eye is landing on. So having that connection and that understanding, you can talk to them about it and say, well, you know, is it this or is it this? And kind of give them examples. I think, and I don't know if Diane would agree with this, but the biggest connection between the two in people's minds and the way they talk about it's different, but is a clean line. Because, you know, when they say that, I think what they mean is nothing kind of gooped up and fancy and too old-fashioned feeling, although actually modern is old-fashioned. So you have to kind of have that conversation. What do you mean by that? Nothing fussy. You know, I think anyone who's a really big fan of what at least regionally is happening in Texas contemporary is not going to be interested in a Victorian vernacular. You know, they're not going to want to do anything with or Greek revival or any of that. You know, it's going to be those clean lines and that very decided, prominent form that we're seeing contemporarily, which is not necessarily modern. So I think that's the reason we're having this conversation today, is just so people can understand and think about what it is that they really like, and then have a way of kind of communicating it to the people helping them do their renovations and build their homes. Okay, do you want to do some listener questions, Diane?
Oh, yeah, we love listener mail. Let's see, I have one here. What is the best way to connect my indoor and outdoor entertaining spaces? Currently, I find that guests either choose one or the other and there isn't good flow.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I can answer because I just wrote a blog on this.
Okay.
Actually, I'll tell my part. I think people need to be brave about furnishing their outdoor space. The connection is important. But I think even if people are looking out of their window and there's only a little door to access the side porch or the backyard, if what they're looking at is a fully furnished, comfortable space with appropriate seating that maybe isn't super soggy or it's partially covered, there's maybe some lighting opportunities next to it, whether it's just some beautiful sort of strung up white lights. But if you light the space and furnish the space almost as though it's an interior room, bravely and boldly and comfortably, then people will go and spend time there. And then I think whatever the space is that's closest on the interior of the house, if those two can sort of be designed in such a way that they almost feel as though if the wall weren't there, they could be having a conversation between the two.
Well, I definitely think having a roof over the outdoor space helps connect. Now, it doesn't have to necessarily be solid. It could be a trellis with vines that feels like a roof, or a pergola or something like that. And then also, if you can't do that, I would say defining the floor space. So either putting in a patio or, you
maybe
know,
just
paving or just
pavers.
Gravel works mm-hmm. as well, mm-hmm. Making it a gravel patio area.
Yeah. So. I also think, actually, that's a good point. You have to give people definition to space so they won't understand how to be in it. And so, yeah, defining it with whatever is the floor of that space, whether it's pavers or – and if you can't do a cover, maybe you do just a decorative wall. Maybe there's just sort of a fence wall that comes up behind one area that a sofa could live against, a little screen wall, basically. Maybe it's done with breeze blocks or some fencing material. But just give the space some parameters so people understand it's defined as an outdoor room and seating area. I think that those two things together.
Yeah. So like you're saying, if you just have a tiny door to it, you don't necessarily have a whole bunch of glass looking at it. But I think if you can define it with floor and ceiling, maybe, or a wall, and then also add all the comfortable furniture for sure.
Yeah. And lighting. I think those things. So.
Oh, and you know, fire is always good too.
That's true.
A fire pit or something.
Some sort of a prominent thing, something for people to gather around. What else we got?
Let's see. I entertain all the time and I feel like things get crazy. How should my living and kitchen space be laid out for seamless entertaining?
Well, Diane, I know you, this is a big one for you because you have a kitchen that you like to keep people managed.
I do. Yeah, I usually like to lay out the kitchen so that people aren't getting in the chef's way. And, you know, the refrigerator I usually like to keep at one end. And so when people are coming in to get drinks, they're not getting in your way. Or kids coming in to get snacks, we try to keep the pantry not within the middle of the kitchen or the access to it.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, is kind of keeping the snack and drink and beverage access on the perimeter and away from the cooking and sink area makes a huge difference.
So like if the island could be set up or an island type of thing where you can keep people on one side of it and they can go on the periphery to get their drinks. Or another good idea is setting up a drink area that's maybe in the living room, right? Like a bar type area you know, have all the drinks set up over there in an ice bucket, and that encourages people to go over there and get away from the kitchen chef area.
Yeah, I think when I used to live in a really small house and I had people over for my kids' birthday parties or whatever, I would my kitchen didn't have any space in it for a lot of people, so I would set up all of the food in the living room, and then, yes, a drinks area or something. So if you do that with your architecture too, and, you know, maybe it's just a little beverage fridge right off the laundry room where the kids pass by every day, or and then there's a sink in there, and you can put a little coffee maker in there, and everybody can kind of, you know, gather there. And then, yeah, preserving the space for the actual workers in the kitchen so that their sanity can be preserved and they can get things done by creating obstacles, whether it's an island or a peninsula, and then giving them things, other places to go to get their needs met for snacking and beverage. Those are big.
One more?
Let's do it.
I work from home and can't seem to ever get in the zone. What is the best way to create a functional home workspace? Yeah, that's tricky.
It is.
I'm not very good working at home.
You're not? Okay. No. Yeah, I think it's weird because it's a combination of creating enough of a boring space that you're not constantly distracted, but also giving yourself a little bit of a view and maybe an opportunity to step outside. So for me, I work facing a wall in a bedroom right now, which is not great. But if because I'm facing the wall and I've got basically my Zoom meeting going or whatever it is, I'm not distracted by the laundry that's behind me, et cetera. And then I've got a big window and a chaise lounge behind me that I can move to when I get uncomfortable sitting in my chair. So so for you, I think the things to think about for creating that space is give it connection. Here's a big one. And this is maybe personal, but I think it's good for everyone, is keep it close enough to the front workings of the house, depending on the type of work that you do, that you can be aware of what's happening maybe at the front door or in the kitchen, but not distracted by it. So it's not, it's kind of leisurely, you know, it's nice to think that you all have the opportunity to create the perfect space for yourself. But if you can, being, like I say, near the kitchen so you can get quick snacks and things like that, but also separate enough that you can't hear everything that's going on. So maybe it's just putting up walls. I actually really like the drop ceiling idea we were talking about earlier. I'm on a personal, I have a personally motivated to create a lower ceilings in spaces where people work and have intimate connections with people, and something like that might help. Or maybe we're adding a lot of cork to the walls in people's workspaces now so that they can organize themselves that way, put things up. And
that probably also helps with sound, right?
Yeah, it helps with sound as well. So those are some ideas that I have used and that we're helping clients with now as well. What do you think, Diane? Does that just working at home doesn't work at all for you, does it?
Well, I just am thinking about all the other things I need to be doing. So if I'm in my office, I don't do that.
So don't work from home. That's Diane's answer.
Well, it's just my own nuttiness, probably.
Well, thank you guys very much. We'll talk to you next time.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Design Oracles with Amity Worrell, owner of Amity Worrell & Company, and Diane Kett, owner of DK Studio, and together, partners at Amity Kett.